Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi everybody and welcome to the show. Today we are talking to coach and Summer Spine South winner, Tim Pigott from HP3 Coaching. Hello Tim, how are you doing today?
Good to be back again, good to see you again, how are you doing?
Yes, I am good, but I have had a bit of disappointing news, which I probably should have checked before I launched this to everybody. I'll probably have to keep repeating this throughout the broadcast as people join. But I emailed Mark Lathwaite, who's the organiser of the Montane Lakeland 100, which I started training for, and he emailed back just immediately saying everybody's got to adhere to these requirements. And I thought that I'd be okay because I've previously done loads of ultra running in the Bob Graham and lots of multi-day races, and I thought, yeah, I've got the experience. But I didn't realise that the experience has to be within 2020 and 2022. So there's no way that I've done a 50-mile race within that time frame because I was pregnant, and also it was COVID. I was pregnant and I had a baby. So I just... So I'm 99% sure that Mark's not going to let me do the Lakeland 100. I'm sure that they'll let me do the 50 because, you know, that's open to a lot more people and everyone can do that one pretty much. But then I did feel very relieved because I was starting to get a bit worried about it. And I just really understand that those types of constraints are there for a reason. And so maybe that's why I'm feeling so relieved. But with that in mind... I just wanted to chat a bit more about 100 milers and how to choose the first one that's right for you, because obviously Lakeland 100 was, even if they let me in, it was going to be a bit of a big ask for the first 100 miler. So I just thought today we could go through what you did for your first 100 miler, why people are even attracted to this distance in the first place, why you're attracted to it, and just bits about how it differs from 50 milers and what kinds of races you should do in the build-up to your first 100 miler. I'm still looking for my first 100 miler, so I have made actually a massive spreadsheet of about 20 of them in the UK, which I will share with patrons only. So if you want that exclusive spreadsheet, then do sign up to follow me on Patreon. So Tim, what was your first 100 miler and why did you even decide to go for that distance?
So I think... the 100-mile distance is somewhat iconic, isn't it, now? I talk about the sort of evolution of endurance running and endurance sport particularly. So in the 80s, it was, could you run a marathon? You know, that was a long way to go. That was going to be a massive challenge. Could you do it? And then we realised, well, actually, yes, as long as you do enough running, you can run a marathon. And then the 90s, it was, could you do a triathlon? Because that seemed crazy, doing swim, bike and run. And again, people realised that, yes, if you train, you can do a triathlon. So then it evolved again into, could you do an Ironman triathlon? And then we're sort of moving away from that now. And there's a big question is, you know, can you run an ultra marathon? And the big thing about an ultramarathon, you know, the really scary concept is, can you run 100 miles? You know, any distance, any number is an arbitrary number, but 100 miles is obviously a long way. And we always do these things because we don't know if we can. And they're supposed to be scary and they're supposed to be unknown. If you were guaranteed to finish and have a good performance, are you motivated to necessarily do these things? You know, we're looking to push ourselves. So I think that's where the sort of 100 mile idea comes from. And that's certainly, you know, what sort of motivated me was, could I actually do it? In terms of picking your first, it's tricky because it depends on what motivates you, really. And you were asking me the question sort of in the lead up to today's chat about, you know, what's the easiest 100 miler you could choose?
Just like for your first one, are there easy, like in massive inverted commas, are there even easy 100 milers? And from my spreadsheet, it definitely looks like there's definitely some that are way harder than others. I know it's going to be hard across the board, but, you know, there's ways of making things hard for yourself.
So I would say there's no such thing as an easy 100 miler at all.
Yeah.
There are harder 100 milers, there are extremely hard 100 milers, and there are insanely hard 100 milers. But I wouldn't say there's an easy 100 miler. However, I'm a firm believer that anybody with sufficient time, training, resources can do a 100 miler.
Wow.
It's not that even 100 miles is beyond the capability of, you know, of your average Joe. You know, anybody can do it. You just need the resources and the time availability to put enough training in to be in a safe place to undertake something like this. There are obviously races where you get a lot more support in terms of, you know, aid stations, crews, things like that. And there are 100 milers where you are largely self-sufficient and you've got to carry everything yourself, and therefore you're, you know, your pack weight is going to be significantly higher. You know, the spine race, as you mentioned there, that I did the Challenger South last year, you ought to carry quite a considerable amount of kit versus maybe something else where there's, you know, more regular aid stations. You're not needing to carry so much of your own food and water and things like that, which certainly takes away some of the challenge. People often then come back to the sort of terrain and is a flat 100 miler going to be easier? And I would say no, because...
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, there are some very flat 100 milers. You can do track races if you really want.
Oh, God.
Well, the thing with flatter races is there's less incentive to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when we're talking about ultramarathon running... We shouldn't really use the word running because it's more fast hiking with a bit of jogging when you can fit it in. And whenever there's an incline, whenever it goes, you know, up, you walk. So, of course, if there's not very much up, there's not a lot of incentive to walk, and you try and maybe run more than you would naturally do. So actually a sort of a more undulating or even hilly 100 miler could actually be slightly less challenging on the body than a flat one.
Oh, that's very interesting to think about.
So, I've certainly felt more beaten up from running a hard marathon, you know, really going for a PB road marathon, than I have running 100 miles.
Yeah.
On, you know, undulating, softer terrain.
Yeah, I could see that, because when I was doing my half marathons to get back to training in the latter part of last year, I was like broken for about a week after both of them. And exactly. I just thought, how am I ever going to run like 100 miles? Like, yeah. I'm broken just by running 13 on tarmac. But yeah, if you're just bimbling around then just jogging and walking, then maybe it's a bit easier in inverted commas.
In inverted commas, it... Again, I'd shy away from the word easy, but I'll probably say it's less painful.
In painful in different ways, maybe, as well.
I mean, there's, you know, you're out there for obviously a long time, so you're dealing with nutrition, you're dealing with potentially sleep deprivation. if you're doing a very mountainous one, you know, you might be going through, you know, two nights, and then you might be dealing with, you know, hallucinations and things like that, and all those kind of fun aspects of ultra running. But it's just, I think the sort of physical pain can be different. Can be, obviously, it depends on the kind of terrain you're doing. So, you asked me earlier on there, so just possibly skipping ahead, your first question was, you know, what was my first 100 miler and my motivation? Well, my first 100 miler start, I DNF'd. So that I went out to do Monte Rosa, Ultra Tour Monte Rosa.
Yeah.
And it was Casey, well, if I'm doing a 100 miler, I'm going to do a really hard one in the mountains.
Yeah.
And I underestimated how hard it was. Maybe overestimated what the support and aid station was going to be, aid station resources were going to be, and wasn't carrying my own enough of my own nutrition. So essentially just ran out of gas.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that, Tim. Like, I regard you as, like, you know, you've won the Summer Spine Challenger South. And I'm just like, I look up to you in terms of training and fitness in every way possible. So I'm really, really pleased to hear that, not in a cackling way, but it's really heartening to know that even you, with all your experience and your, like, really good fitness and, you know, excellent head around all these all the preparation that you have to do, even you didn't do your first one. So I should sign up to my first one and not, well, I don't expect to finish. You shouldn't expect to finish maybe a first 100.
You learn more from your mistakes than your successes, I would say. I went out to race that and I was sick in the week leading up to it, so I had just a head cold. But again, you know, carrying a head cold and then going to race 100 miles in the mountains, that wasn't great. But of course, I invested a vast amount in time and energy and everything else just to get to that start line. So I was going to start and just see how I got on. And in the end, obviously I didn't finish. I got to 86 miles.
Wow, that's brilliant.
So my second, inverted commas, 100 miles, was the Lady Anne Way.
Okay.
Which was a race last January. Yes. So it goes from Skipton up to Penrith. In fact, the mapping wasn't brilliant, so it wasn't actually 100 miles. It was about 97, 98 miles. So.
Oh, never mind. I'm sure you did a few going to registration and back.
Ish. But I went into that one with a pure focus of, I've just got to finish this. Mm-hmm. And far more prepared, more aid stations, very well stocked aid stations, great support. So everything was laid up for success there. And, you know, it's a nice undulating course up through the Yorkshire Dales. So I've spotted that one wasn't on your spreadsheet. So I would add one in.
No, it wasn't.
They just ran a shorter version just last weekend, the 75-mile version run by NAV4 Adventure.
Okay, so it's called the Lady Anne Way, is it?
Lady Anne Way, 100-mile. Okay. So Mel Stevenson is running the 100-mile version next year.
Okay.
And that'll be going the opposite direction, going from Penrith to Skipton.
Cool.
And it's a stunning route. So if you're looking for a 100-mile race in, you know, midwinter.
What time of year is that, sorry?
It'll be January.
Oh, okay, January.
So it's a midwinter 100 miler.
Yeah.
What an interesting course that's challenging, but not crazy. It's just undulating through the Yorkshire Dales, essentially, coming through the Yorkshire Dales. So I'd thoroughly recommend that one.
Okay. I'll add it to my spreadsheet. For anyone who's just joined, I have made a spreadsheet of the UK's, well, a lot of the UK's 100 milers. There are now 20 on the list. So I'll definitely be sharing this spreadsheet with patrons. Because when I was trying to look for other 100 milers that I could do that weren't the Lakeland 100, it turns out most of them have got pretty stringent entry requirements as well, obviously.
Yeah,
for very good reasons, and totally respect that. So all of them, I would have had to do a 50 miler at some point. So unless I whip one out of the bag over the next couple of months, which I could do, but I don't think I'm really properly there yet, so I don't want to rush it. There's no rush. So a lot of them have this 50-mile requirement, but I was looking at lots of different ones, like for maybe June time or something like that, and I realised that there's a lot of variation in when they start. Some of them start like midday on Friday, some 8 a.m. on Saturday. I was looking at the, especially the West Highland Way Ultra, well, the West Highland Way race, because of John Kinnaston, who used to do some work on the channel as well. He was really, like, his heart was really involved in that. So I thought, oh, that would be a great homage to him to do that race. But it starts at 1 a.m. on Saturday, and that's just crazy. Like, either start at 6 or start in the morning, because you're not going to sleep that night, are you? So, yeah, it was just a really varied selection of start times. And I just thought, well, I probably want to choose one that starts at like 8 o'clock on a Saturday, because then I don't know, would I just be going through one night then, presumably, rather than two? I've just got this fear now of running through two nights. So I don't know which time frame to pick. Like, that's now a factor in choosing my first one.
It is all about trying to calculate how many nights people are going to go through. So depending on the, you know, your expected finish time, depending on the challenge, you know, in terms of the elevation profile. So obviously more elevation, likely it's going to be taking you a lot longer. And therefore, how does that then impact on how many nights you're going through? So it's not uncommon for these longer races to be starting at, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, like you say, 1 o'clock in the morning, so 10, 11 at night or 1 o'clock in the morning, so that you're, you know, running through that first night, but then you've got full day ahead to then get it finished and hopefully finishing before it gets dark again and not going through that second night.
Is that what they're anticipating then? Because I was just thinking, oh, goodness me, I'm going to be finishing on the Sunday morning and I'm going to have missed two nights sleep and I haven't even been running from...
And again, it's... To be fair, some of it is also around the sort of front end of the field and when they're more likely to finish and side of that, so that they're not, you know, the winners aren't finishing at 3 o'clock,
in the morning.
Yeah, and nobody around to see them.
Yeah.
So there is that element as well.
Yeah. Well, I was just looking at that, and I was also looking at the cutoff times, because from my chart, I can see, you know, like there's anything from the Long Distance Walkers Association annual 100-mile challenge, where you get 48 hours to do your 100, to something like the South Downs Way 100, where you only get 30 hours, because you're supposed to be running it, not walking it. Yeah, so I was looking at cutoff times, and I think that must be quite something to look for from doing your first, definitely.
It's a question of, and I think I did see on your Patreon channel, somebody was asking the question about, you know, cutoffs and being concerned about, you know, being ahead of those cutoffs. And I coached somebody for UTMB. She ran it last year after DNFing the year previously because she missed the cutoff. Mm-hmm. And obviously that was a big concern for her. It was all about getting to her into a fitness level and into a situation where we knew that being ahead of those cutoffs wasn't going to be an issue for her. We knew that she was going to be safe. But also putting lots of planning in place in terms of her knowledge of time splits and where she needed to be at certain times. Was she could just mentally go, oh yeah, I've got an hour in the bag, oh yeah, I've got 2 hours in the bag, and just having that knowledge then just took anxiety away. So I had another athlete who was racing last weekend, another 100 miler over in the States, and unfortunately I think I just lost internet there.
Something went wrong just for a second there. There was a beeping sound. You're back now.
I haven't
though.
Got sound. Technical difficulties.
Oh, can you not hear what I'm saying?
What's happening? Oh, sound coming back.
Oh, good. Can you hear me now?
There we go.
Oh,
sorry about that. I just lost internet there for a second.
Okay. You're back
where,
now.
That's where did I drop off?
I think it was... you were just talking about a lady that had done the UTMB and she had to get her head in gear, and then you were just talking about the next person.
Okay, so yeah, so I had somebody else who was racing 100 miler last weekend, but for different reasons, she ended up DNFing that race. But along with that, she'd also started to get confused around the cutoffs and thought that she was behind schedule, whereas actually she was about an hour ahead of the cutoffs.
Oh, no.
So she just got confused around that, and that was maybe a sort of contributing reason for then not managing to finish the race. So what I always recommend is you've got sort of flashcards, so just in your pocket of your race vest, it just have a series of little flashcards to break that race down into segments. But then also you've got your time split, so you open it up and it's right, for the next 5 miles or 7 miles, 10 miles, I've got to get to this point.
Yeah, by this time. By
this time of day. Ah. I'm expecting it to take me this amount of hours, minutes. I'm planning on eating and drinking these bits of food, drink, whatever it's going to be. So it's all written down. So no matter how tired you are and how much your brain starts to go, it's just written down. Oh, I can see what the time is. I can see where I need to be. Boom, yeah. It just takes away any of that fear.
Oh, that's such a great idea. Because when I was looking at all this, I was thinking, blimey, there's just a lot to take in. And even once you've chosen your first one, it's like a full-time job, just like, you know, getting all the kit sorted and then all this timing business. And, you know, you go through, you look at the list of checkpoints and they've all got a time cutoff on. And it does seem very complicated, just compared to your normal marathon where you just go out and just jog around for a bit.
Yeah.
It's not relaxing, is it?
What you need to do is plan everything in advance. So if you've planned it all out, it's written down. Like I say, I just laminate little flashcards. So no matter how tired my brain is, if I'm not thinking straight, I can just pull it out of my pocket, look at it. Okay, fine, put it away again, off we go. So prior preparation prevents poor performance.
Yes,
it is that. In advance, and then the race goes smoothly because there is no thinking involved.
Yeah, and I suppose another aspect to thinking about choosing your first 100 miler is the time of year as well, because I know you've suggested the new one, the Lady Anne Way, in January. I've noticed that there's quite a few in January. You've got your Spine Challenger South, you've got your Arc of Attrition, and then Lady Anne Way. Then there's tons in May. There's like 5 or 6 in May, then loads in June, millions in June, couple in July, one in August, one in September, one in October, one in November. I can't find any in December. I haven't done an extensive search, but can't really find any in December. I can't really find any in February, March, April. So it's just funny, isn't it, that most people seem to think that you should be running a 100 miler either in the new year or in the summer.
Yeah, I suppose it's the, you know, midwinter is, if you're going to do a 100 miler, well, make it a hard one and add in complications of the weather. But of course, the summer ones aren't necessarily easier in terms of weather, because you could be dealing with significant temperature in terms of, you know, heat.
Yeah.
So a very hot one could add significant challenge in terms of dehydration, access to enough water. So when I did the Challenger last year, It was a warm one. It was in the sort of towards the end of a bit of a heat wave. There wasn't a lot of water out on the course in terms of stream. A lot of the streams had dried up, and you know what streams they were, you know, a bit of muddy trickles, and you didn't really want to be drinking that.
Mm.
So you know, you end up then carrying more water, and water is heavy.
Mm.
So you know that does then play into it as well. Whereas obviously a winter one, you don't necessarily need to carry as much, because there's more out there on the course that you can access.
Yeah, so, it is really interesting, because with Lakeland 100, with the heat wave that we had this year just gone, I was getting really worried about it being in July as well, because I was just thinking, if it's 40 degrees, I'm toast. I'm ginger. I'm not surviving that. I'll have to DNF.
50, oh goodness me, what year was that? Maybe 2015? I think, something like that. And he was a hot one then. And yeah, absolutely, you know, you're going literally from aid station to aid station and just getting there in time to refill all your bottles. And there wasn't a lot of out there, sort of little streams to refill from. So yeah.
Yeah.
It really depends on, you know, what suits you better. Are you somebody that does well in the heat, in which case obviously a summer one's can be maybe better for you. If you know that you really struggle in the heat, then maybe picking an early season longer race is going to be better for you.
Yeah, there's so many factors, and that's why I just ended up making this spreadsheet, because I just thought, oh goodness me, I need to just look at them all, like all the ascents. I've got the date, I've got the mileage, because it's not all 100, some are 108, some are 110, some are 97 and some, like, you know, the Spine Challenge, I forgot to read this out earlier, it's 60 hours that you get for that one, and then you've got 28 for something like the Thames Path, and the prices wildly different. Spine Challenger South, I think next year it's going to be £475 potentially, whereas you've got the Long Distance Walking Association's annual 100 miler, that's 115, and the GB Ultras are all £169. Yes. Centurion running ones are always £215. And it just, sometimes it doesn't reflect what aid stations you get either, because the GB Ultras get loads of aid stations. They seem really good value for money, and so did Centurion Running's one. Whereas West Highland Way Race, it's £122, but you've got to take your own crew and start at 1 a.m. So yeah, it's really interesting to make this spreadsheet, and I think I do want to do a 100 miler. I just I've not really wanted to do one before, but it's the distance that I haven't done out of all the distances. I've done 65 miles, and there's not many 80 mile races. So I just thought, oh yeah, a 100 miler, I want to experience it, because it's just completely different to a 50, isn't it? Can you sort of put into words how it differs from to a 50? I know it's longer, but how different is it to doing a 50 miler?
Yeah. So a 50 miler, you're expecting yourself to run a lot of that. Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas a 100 miler, you're expecting yourself to walk most of it, I would say.
Okay.
There's obviously, you know, the races that I've done, I've been, you know, trotting steady, you know, steady running those kind of 100 milers. But for most people, it's more kind of flipping it round, that it's a fast hike with a bit of running when you go into up to the 100 miles. Uh-huh. Whereas a 50 miler, you're going to try and run a lot of that and then fast hike the bits that are uphill and you need to.
Yeah.
The, you know, 50 miler, you're doing that in a day. Yeah. 100 miler, it's going to be going over into the second day. So you're dealing with sleep deprivation. A 50 miler, you can do on drink and gels and simple stuff like that. 100 miler, you've got to bring real food into it. Mm-hmm. So there's the, you know, nutritional components into there. It depends on sort of navigation as well.
So, oh yes, I forgot to mention navigation.
Absolutely. You know, some of these are going to be simpler in terms of navigation. They might be very well marked. Other ones are going to be far more complicated in terms of navigation. So, you know, that needs to come into it as well. You know, the 100 miler is it is really all up here. It's your decision making, it's your mental strength. Whereas, you know, 50 miler, there's a bigger emphasis on your physical fitness. The mental, obviously, is still a very, very big part of that. But you know, I've done reasonably well at 100 mile races. I am not the fittest, fastest, strongest person out there. My success has been down to making the right decisions at the right time. So, you know, there's that comes into it as well when you're going longer.
Yeah. I kind of feel like you can put up with a few more things at 50 miles, like, you know, like maybe you've got a niggle or a blister or, you know, you feel a bit sick, but 100, you've got to like put up with it and come out the other side as well. Like, you can't allow things to get too far because you've got to do it all over again.
Go wrong. It's not a case of you're going to have a perfect race. Something will go wrong. At least one thing will go wrong in an ultramarathon. Those who do well are those that can problem solve on the fly. So again, it's all about that planning and preparation. We talk about actions on. So you've already thought through everything that could go wrong for that. So that when it does go wrong, boom, we just do this. Boom, we just do that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in a shorter distance race,
You broke up.
100 miler.
Oh, sorry, you broke up a little bit there, Tim. Sorry, you broke up a little bit there, Tim. Can you repeat the last bit that you were saying?
So just saying that in a 50 miler, we might expect something to go wrong, but you might just be able to battle through and still get to that finish line. Oh, we're having bad connections.
Oh, is it my end? Oh, it says I've got full bars.
Don't. I am only on a couple of bars.
Oh, okay.
Sorry about this.
I can hear you now. Well, it's all the fun of a live broadcast.
Indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can sort of battle on in the 50 miler, but 100, you've really got to either sort it out or put up with it and then come out the other side as well. Yeah, it really is. Yeah. It's a big jump, isn't it? And I'm thinking maybe, yes, do the Lakeland 50 and prepare for doing that in under 16 hours, which is what you need to do to then qualify to do the 100 the following year. So I can't hang about on the 50 miles just having a lovely time and taking a lovely film. So that's what I will train for as my A race this year. But then I need to maybe I could do an 80 miler just to sort of jump up. I was just thinking maybe 80 miles would be a good step up. Maybe 75, 80 miles. Before doing the Lakeland 100, or is it just a case of doing a few more 50s? Just wasn't sure whether doing an 80 miler, something like the Hardmoors or something. Oh, sorry, I think you're back now.
Yeah, so I keep having some internet issues. Apologies about this. 80 miles is another really good stepping stone that you can learn the craft of these longer races. So the Hardmoors series, yes, they've got a number of races in that distance. Another one, which I know has got entries available, is the Ridgeway Challenger.
Okay.
Ridgeway Challenge. Ridgeway Challenge, isn't it? I should think is 86 miles.
Oh, yeah. I've done that over 3 days, three times, actually, in the Druids Challenge, that Ridgeway path.
Yes.
So I did see that and I just thought, oh, not again. And that's the other thing I wanted to mention with choosing the first 100 miler and 50s really as well, would be to choose something that really inspires you, because there's a couple that, like, there's one that I could do after the Lakeland 50. So presuming that I was successful in that, I could enter the autumn 100, with Centurion Running, but it's 25 miles of out and back four times in four different directions. And
that's
just,
right. Yeah.
And that just doesn't appeal to me at all. Okay. And there's also a Centurion, it's called the Minotaur Challenge. And that's a 1 mile loop that just goes around and around. There's also really near me, there's the Grim Reaper, where you could do 100 miles, but that's a 10-mile path. And just stuff like that, just, I don't think I could do it just because it just doesn't appeal to me at all. It doesn't ignite any passion in me. The Lakeland 100 does. And this race, it's a new one. It's called the Dartmoor Way 100, and it's in November. You get 34 hours and there's 6 aid stations, but it's a circular route on this new Dartmoor Way, and that just appeals difficult, you've got to navigate, and that really appeals to me. So I think you've got to do, a lot of athletes I've talked to in the past about picking the best ultra for you, like Scott Jurek said, pick one that inspires you. And I think that's definitely a very, very valid.
Because
running out and back, I'd just be like, oh God, I've got to run a marathon. I've got to run there and turn around, then there and turn around, then there and turn around. Then I just don't know, but it just doesn't inspire me in the same way that seeing the lakes does, or seeing Dartmoor does.
Absolutely. You need to understand why you're entering this. And you and I talked about this in the past, about your sort of zero to ultra series, wasn't it? I talked about this sort of, why are you entering these events? And we need to have a very clear motivation for this. And that's up to you. It's picking somewhere, maybe a destination that you want to go and explore.
Yeah, like Dartmoor. I haven't hardly ever run in Dartmoor.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's a new way as well. It's a new route. And then there's one that GB Ultras do as well, called Ultra Scotland 100 Miler. That's in June, so I'm not sure about that one. But it wouldn't be too hot, and it's on the Southern Uplands Way, which is a new new national trail that they've just opened up, or something like that. There was something new about it, and I just thought, oh, that looks great as well. So it's definitely about adventure and exploration for me, not just the fact that I've run 100 miles out and back. It's got to be a journey. So that's good to know as well, I suppose.
Yeah, although, I mean, the race that I, you know, tend to do is more kind of point to point. You know, you're going somewhere. That makes sense in my head. But I also see the attraction of, for example, the Autumn 100, which I think I've not done it. I was looking to do it actually last year. But that one also is attractive to me because it's mentally easier to break down into segments. You've only got to go and run 20-25 miles.
Yeah.
And then you go out and do another 25 miles. Yeah. And then you go out and do another. So it's easier just to go into that kind of goldfish bowl of, I'm only doing this small little thing, which then builds up. It's easier in terms of, I shouldn't be using that word easier, should I? But logistically, you've got more support. There's loads of aid stations. You're coming back to your own drop bag where you can get resupplies with your own stuff. So things like that can make life less complicated for you.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that could be a real attraction that you can do that. It's something, again, you know, you could have your family, friends at that central hub that could, you know, you could see them more frequently. That might be an attraction.
Yeah. And so, could you enter 100 with the idea of getting to 80 and just seeing how you felt? You know, like if there wasn't an 80 miler, because there's not that many of them, if there wasn't an 80 miler in the time frame, in the place that you wanted, do you think it would be a good idea for if I decided to enter the Autumn 100 but had the goal of 80 in my mind? Like, is that something you ever recommend people do?
Because, little glitch in the matrix. I'm going to say no, because you've frozen. I don't know if I've frozen.
Hello? You froze just a sec there. Are you back?
Yeah.
Yes.
So I would say no to sort of planning a DNF.
Really?
Because
that's interesting as well.
Because you're taking a place off somebody else who maybe is really keen to do that. These races all sell out. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be entering something with and you don't manage to finish. But I think that's different to a planned DNF, and is maybe disrespectful to the race organisers and other people who are very keen to do those races.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's a bit naughty, isn't it, to take up a space? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't planning to do that anyway. honest. Cool. Well, I think we've covered a good amount of chit-chat about the how to choose your first 100-miler. I hope everyone feels a bit more kind of clued in. And if you do want to become a patron, I will share with you my amazing spreadsheet, and I will add the Lady Anne Way into there as well, based on Tim's recommendation. And we've got a few patron questions now for Tim. If anybody's got any questions, do just comment in the chat below. Like when the live chat ends, then if you've got any more questions for me or Tim, then just put them in the YouTube comments below, and one of us will get back to you. But we've got a question about 200 milers here from Kurt, who lives in the USA. And he says, can you point me to some good content for training for really long races? He's got an athlete that will be tackling the Tahoe 200 this June. He hasn't run it or coached someone to that distance, so he's looking for additional advice and info. So, yeah, have you got like a couple of golden points that you could give to Kurt there?
It is about just building the time on feet. So it's having some big weekends where you're just going out and hiking for 3 days solid, and learning the tactics on when it comes to nutrition, but sleep management, you know, when are you going to sleep, where are you going to sleep, how long are you going to sleep for. So it's building that in. It's taking your traditional, maybe sort of more 100 mile type training plan, stretching it out a little bit longer to build in some of these bigger weekends where you are testing your skill set for being on your feet for multiple days. Really, that's the sort of key difference. You can't run more in training. It's not a case of, you know, you do, let's say, 70 miles a week for a 100 miler, so you do 100 miles a week for a 200 miler. It's not necessarily about more volume overall, but it's about developing the skill set for being on your feet, not just for 1 to 2 days, but it's going to be for, you know, 3 days, 4 days non-stop. That's the kind of skill set you're looking to develop. So if your athlete's used to doing a lot of kind of through hiking, if it's an American athlete, you know, he's working on that through hiking type skill set. So rather than being as a pure runner. In terms of resources, you could be looking at, there are training plans out there. So if you explore some of the Training Peaks stores, I've got some example plans. I don't think they're visible on my Training Peaks store, but I know a couple of my colleagues, they do have those sort of 200 mile type training plans available. If you're coaching yourself, then again, it's maybe talking to some of the other coaches over in the States. The first name that jumps into my head is David Roach, who I know he's worked with people doing sort of much longer distance races like that. There are a network of other people. So it is a case of, you know, maybe having a call with a couple of other coaches. If you're part of the Training Peaks network, then put a message out there. And, you know, there are a few of us out there that are coaching these type of people. More than happy to share ideas and bounce ideas around. Another colleague of mine who I do a lot of work with is Doug Stewart. You know, again, spine race runner, done the full distance. You know, he's got a lot of experience with these type of things as well. So, you know, there are people out there. So, yeah, get in touch and have a chat.
Thank you very much, Tim. I hope that helped you out, Kurt. And we've got another question from Arnold. Patron Arnold. So he says, what is the minimum amount of time that you'd give for rest and recovery between ultras? Now, that's a good one, and that's one we didn't even touch on, did we, as part of choosing the first 100, because it would be the first. How many should you do in 1 year, I suppose?
Again, it all depends on you as an individual as to how well you recover and how much experience you've got. You know, as with all of these things, the more you do them, the more your body learns about the challenge and can recover quicker. Mm-hmm. I would say, again, you can be looking at some of the elites, and, you know, some of them are knocking out multiple 100 milers in quite quick succession. But not all of us, very few of us, are like Courtney DeWalter or Killing Journey or people like that. So, you know, you might be looking at one at the start of a season and another one later on in the season in terms of, you know, big ultras, you know, really peaking maybe just twice in a season. It might only be once in a season. It really depends on what other demands you've got on your time, how much you can dedicate to this.
Yeah.
But, you know, recovery, if you go down the old saying of, you know, a day per mile of race, you could be looking at a good few months recovery after something like a 100 miler. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, I suppose just listen to your own body then is the key.
Yes.
There. And don't. There's no rush to come back super quickly. I mean, unless you're an elite athlete, there really is no rush, really, apart from the pressure you put on yourself. Yeah. Okay, well, I hope that helped you, Arnold. I hope that you're listening to this. Got a question from Mike, who's over in the Isle of Man. I will be seeing him at the Manx Mountain Marathon in April, which is not too far away now. He's got a question about training with weights. He's doing this 18-week progressive program, and he feels like he's hit enough weight in terms of upper body lifting, but the program wants him to progress further. So he's just saying, does he assume that as runners there's such a thing as too much bulk? There's a typo on there, it says touch bulk, but we think it means too much bulk. So yeah, I mean, yeah, upper body lifting, is that going to be detrimental?
It depends on the demands of the race. So if your race is involving you carrying quite a lot of kit, so a heavy pack, you're going to need a bit more shoulder bulk to take the load of that pack. Mm-hmm. You're going to need more sort of upper and lower back strength to take the load of your running pack. You know, I've seen people DNF in the spine race because they couldn't deal with the weight of the pack. Their legs were fine, but their shoulders were destroyed from carrying the pack. If you're using running poles, for example, then yes, running poles will make you more efficient and they'll help you only if you've got sufficient upper body strength. So you do need a reasonable amount of strength. However, he's asking the question about bulk. And there is no getting away from the fact that, you know, you want to be, your power to weight ratio needs to be optimum, whatever that is. And that's a very complicated question. So your strength training doesn't want to be focusing on hypertrophy, so making bigger and bigger muscles.
Yeah, like Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of style. Yeah.
So if you're doing a strength program, it needs to be very specific to your needs. There may be an early hypertrophy phase where you are looking to maybe add a little bit of muscle bulk. But then, yes, certainly there is such a thing as maybe too much bulk. So the strength needs to then shift to more strength and maybe strength power or muscular endurance and not around muscle bulking and muscle hypertrophy.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to your sets and reps. So the weight might be going up, but because of the programming of the percentage of your one rep max, the number of repetitions you're lifting, the stimulus will not be around bulking, but more around strength and power. And that's different. So it's worth exploring that one and just checking, you know, who's written this training plan. Is it specifically for your needs? Or does that need tailoring slightly differently? And again, if you need help with that, I've got Morgan, our strength and conditioning coach, as part of HP3, and she can certainly customise a strengthening training plan for you if needed.
Ah, brilliant. Cool. Sign up for that then, Mike. That seems to be your answer just there. Yeah, that would be brilliant. Yeah, if anybody does want to book Tim for any coaching, just check out the HP3 coaching website. There's a whole team available there to coach you to your goals. And I just, having a coach and following a training plan is like, following their training plan is one of the best things you can do as a sort of recreational runner to boost your performance, in my experience. it just makes you, it just brings out the best in you, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. And then a final question from patrons. We've got James, who he says, he's doing this HR training. He signed up for a 50K in October, so that will be his first ultra. And he says he's got plenty of time to train, but he says he wants to know how quickly heart rate training shows meaningful results, because the internet is a bit vague. So he's written another thing here, because he's training with using his heart rate. I think he's doing Maffetone training. So it's only been 2 years since he was last running properly, because he had an illness and an injury. But he's saying that he's doing Maffetone training with HR, so he's running at a really low heart rate. But he's saying at the moment he can barely break out of a walk before he hits his Maffetone HR training beats per minute. So I'm guessing it's like, I don't know, like 120 or something. But yeah, how long will it take for him to be running at that heart rate?
Yeah, so this is maybe a kind of a much broader question. In short, you do need to persevere, and it can take months to really build that up. And those who do persevere with that very low heart rate, you know, they do report good successes. The criticism of Maffetone is it is just an arbitrary number that you're picking. And doesn't necessarily match your zone. If you're talking about a three zone model, then your zone one, below that first ventilatory threshold. If you're talking about a five zone model, you're talking about, you know, staying in zone two, that again aerobic zone. So it really depends on where your specific upper limit of your aerobic zone is, where that first ventilatory threshold is. So if you're really struggling to keep your heart rate in that so-called Maffetone zone, it may be that's not right for you. And it'd probably be better to maybe do a little bit of testing to work out where your aerobic zone is, where that that first ventilatory threshold is.
So that is, are you talking about zone one there?
So if we're talking about three zone model, we're talking about zone one.
And that's the chatting pace, is it?
Yeah, so essentially it's just chatting, running, nice and easy. You could breathe only through your nose. That's another useful way to keep you in that easy aerobic zone. As soon as you're working hard enough that you need to open your mouth to breathe, and that nose breathing alone isn't enough, you're going too hard, so slow down. So it might be you just need to explore with that. And in terms of, you know, persevering with it, yeah, persevere with building that aerobic base. With a slow, steady running, yes, that probably means walking any uphills, but it will pay dividends in the end. So those who can sort of run at a very easy pace at that so-called Maffetone zone, staying, you know, below MAF, great. If you're starting from a very low level of fitness, you might find that MAF is just going walking to start with. But if you've been doing that for some time and still find you can't break out of a walk, then it might be that actually your numbers are wrong, and it'd be worth using another measure to keep you in that easy domain, the like I say, zone one, zone two, depending on which model of zone measuring you're referring to.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds sound. Yes, I did a lot of really low heart rate training in 2014/15 training for Coastal Challenge Costa Rica, and definitely it does really pay off. I did it for about 6 months and then carried on as well. And by the end of it, I was running like 9.5 minute miles at 140 beats per minute, which I cannot do now. So yeah, I would love to get back to that.
Cool.
Thank you. David Thompson's just arrived. He said he put a question in the patron group. Let me just get that there, unless you want to write it down for us here, David. We've probably got time just for one more question for Tim. Let me just get the patron group up. See if it's Facebook or Patreon.
I've got it. Just on a basic, simple speed sessions to incorporate into a 100-miler plan. Yeah, so speed work is still...
Oh, let's just read the question out here. Is it just on basic, simple speed sessions? Would you incorporate some speed sessions into a 100-miler plan?
Yeah, so I would incorporate strides, definitely. So either hill strides, flat strides, working on that, running mechanics, you're running efficiency. In terms of longer efforts, for a 100-miler, I'd be working on more sort of tempo. So it might be, I think you just said there, you were doing some mile repeats. Really depends on what intensity you're talking about. If you're a long way from your race date, so if you're several months away from your race date, you could be doing some much faster threshold efforts, VO2 max efforts, things like that. As you get closer to the more race specific build, that's going to drop down to more tempo efforts. So maybe kind of 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 15, maybe even 20 minutes, sort of stronger running. But in those sort of early phases of a 100-mile plan, a little bit of speed work would be very, very useful. So it could be, you know, some short efforts, like say some strides. It could be the sort of 2 to 3 minute efforts, and then stretching out to maybe sort of 4 or 5 minute efforts at around threshold, but then shifting the emphasis as you work through the training plan later on into more tempo efforts.
Okay, yeah. Well, I hope that answers your question, David. And thank you very much, Tim, for the entry.
Yeah, apologies about my dodgy internet connection. Hopefully that's come across on the recording okay.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone can put up with a little bit of glitching. That's the beauty of a live chat, and we're just really grateful that you're here to talk to us, Tim. So for anyone who's just joining us now, we're about to end. Sorry about that, but you can watch this again. And if you've got any questions, type them in the YouTube comments below. Basically, the announcement is that I don't have the required races within the time frame of 2020 to 2022 to do the Lakeland 100 this year. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to do that this year. But I will be doing the 50. So I think next month's chat should be about how to get a 50 that qualifies you to do a 100-miler, because a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them that I've been looking at say that you've got to do a 50-mile race in either under 15 or 16 hours. So I think next time we should have a chat about how to qualify for your first 100 by doing one of these 50-mile races, and how you just get that little bit of quickness. And just, it's nice to end on a speed work question there. How you get that little bit of speed in, because I'm a plodder, definitely. So even doing the Lakeland 50 in 16 hours is going to be a challenge.
Yeah, cool. We'll talk about that next time.
Cool. So just let everyone know how they can find you, and just what services you provide if anybody wants to take this a little bit further and get the best out of their performance.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Instagram. It's where I do most of the sports side of things. So that's Tim Piggott, HP3. The website is hp-3.co.uk. If you need any help with training plans or any support with coaching, then give me a shout. There's obviously myself, and I've got a couple of other coaches in terms of the endurance coaching. We've got Morgan, who can sort out strength and conditioning coaching for you. We've got Amy, our sports psychologist, if you need any help there. We've got Liz and Howard, our sports nutritionists. So we've got a range of people and services that can help you, get the best out of yourself.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for your time here today, Tim. I have made a list of the top UK 100 milers. So if people want to become a patron, then I will make that available somehow. I'm going to try and do it now to everyone, because it is a very useful list. And I will be picking one to do after doing the Lakeland 50. But let's focus on that now for the next part of the year. Cool. Okay. Thanks very much, Tim. And we shall meet soon. Worries.
Yep. Cheers. See you later.
Bye, everyone.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.